we are seeing the first entity only known as Ports Regulator of South Africa. We are scheduled to start at 9:30. It's 9:30. So we know each other by now. So we are not going to introduce each other because we know each other. And I'm going to allow you to present. We will interact with your presentation after your presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the honourable members and officials here today. The presentation has been handed out, and so I will start on the second page, looking at the overview of 2018-19. Essentially, the ports regulator has answered to President Ramaphosa's call to reduce port and other administered prices in the economy, in providing a decrease in Ports Authority tariffs of -6.27% for 2019-20, the current year, as announced at our press conference on 30th November 2018. Mindful of our slowing economic growth over the tariff period, coupled with the need for investment in the country's port infrastructure, the regulator opted to add 539 million to the excessive tariff increase margin facility, the ETIMC, which we call for short, to ensure that the overall average tariffs in the outer 2 years of the period under review and beyond remain close to the inflation target band, bringing the balance in this important savings facility to over 3 billion rand. Also, in support of economic development, the Port Tariff Incentive Program, PTIP we call for short, was developed in the previous year and had been continued. Whilst no award was made in this respect, the PTIP continues to serve as a mechanism by which cross subsidies within the port tariff structure may be implemented, quantified, as well as to be fair in the public interest. A reduction in tariff, if justified and approved, will be granted through the amendment of a specific tariff line. The performance incentive system published as part of the current tariff methodology, called Weighted Efficiency Gain on Operations, or WEGO for short, allows the Ports Authority as a regulator of operators to gain or lose up to 5% profit for an up to 10% increase or decline, respectively, on a year-on-year performance for a basket of measurable indicators. The 2019-20 tariff process will herald now the first time in which a WEGO award or disincentive will be determined under this important program, and the Ports Consultative Committees across the country have played an important or key role in this regard. Moving on to the next page. South Africa's first formal methodology for the valuation of the regulatory asset base of the National Ports Authority was completed and published by the end of the last financial year, and in the 2019-20 tariff announced on 20th November 2018 was the first in which a tariff was based on the new regulatory asset base valuation framework. This has allowed the regulator to significantly lower tariffs, resulting in savings to port users whilst maintaining the continued sustainability of the Ports Authority. Over the recent years, the organization produced the first port sector review and regulatory review done by stakeholder consultation and surveys. Other studies over the years included the ongoing Global Ports Pricing Comparative Study, now the seventh iteration of this study that has been published, the Capacity and Utilization Study for South African Ports, the Ports Efficiency Benchmarking Study that compares our own efficiencies to international efficiencies, and all of these have been valuable in the reduction of the cost of doing business with South Africa and vital to the success of the National Development Plan and our economic success as a country as a whole. The regulator's compliance monitoring framework included research on BBBE and equity of access in our ports and analyzing Ports Act compliance. In this regard, the regulator has published its baseline equity of access reports, a report which analyzes BBBE implementation by companies in our port system and analyzes the extent of transformation in the various categories that make up the structure of the port industry in South Africa. This baseline report, based on 2015-16 BBBE certificate information, will serve as a yardstick for measuring progress on transformation in the port sector in future years. The port sector selected research reports as well as our regulatory framework documents have recently been published in print format, and we've handed these to the committee secretary to hand out to you today. As far as the organization is concerned, 100% of organizational delivery targets have been met in the last financial year, and the ports regulator received an unqualified audit. In the year ahead, the regulator intends to develop and consult with its stakeholders on its third multi-year tariff methodology, MYM3, and to continue its work in the transformation and BBBE participation of the sector whilst continuing its analytical and compliance work. We hope to be able to enhance the capacity of the regulator as required by the National Development Plan for all regulators and fill key unfunded posts as greater financial resources become available. The next page gives you page four gives you an idea of the members that were the members of the port regulator during the financial year. So they were from the 1st of September 2015, and their extended term ended on the 30th of November 2018. And these were the different members of the regulator. For now, there is no regulator, and so the next page gives an idea of then the accounting authority responsibility now rests with myself as CEO. So essentially, besides the performance of their regulatory duties and functions in terms of the National Ports Act, the regulator members that we've had on the previous page have also been the governing body and have played the role of the accounting authority for the ports regulator as an entity. The three-year term of the members came to an end on 31st August 2018, whereupon a three-month extension was approved in terms of the Act by the Honourable Minister Nzimande up to 30th November 2018, whereafter no further appointments of regulator members by the executive authority were made. In the interim, the Honourable Nzimande appointed myself the CEO on 8th of May 2019 in terms of Section 49(2) of the PFMA, and I quote, to be the accounting authority of the port regulator with all the delegated powers of the board with effect from 1st December until the appointment of a new board, or I advise you otherwise. This is why you do not see board members sitting here today. I'll just look at the slide 6, key projects. Many important initiatives are being undertaken which will improve the efficiency of our ports and positively affect the South African economy. These are the implementation of the Port Tariff Incentive Program, the implementation of the Regulatory Asset-Based Valuation Methodology, the implementation of the Operational Efficiency Incentive as part of the tariff setting process. This is WEGO that I spoke about earlier. The development of the new multi-year tariff methodology, and we want to do an analysis of leases and rentals within the port system to assess their fairness. In the years ahead, the regulator intends to expand its role in monitoring transformation and BBBE participation of the sector, greater scrutiny and prudency assessment of capital investments of the Ports Authority, assisting the DOT in encouraging South African flag vessel registration as well as coastal shipping, and all of these issues will be attended to whilst we continue our ongoing analytical tribunal and compliance work. As I said earlier, we hope to be able to enhance, with your assistance as well, the funding situation of the regulator to fill key unfunded posts, therefore, and strive to retain the skills we have assembled as these greater financial resources can become available to us. I move on then to the audited organizational performance for 2018-19. Just in general, before I go into each particular line, as I said earlier on, we achieved 100% of the performance, so they are all green as such in terms of actual performance. There were 27 lines or items within this, and 100% of the 27 items were achieved. So I think moving on to page 8, the efficient running, the running of an efficient and effective administration system, and this section deals with our corporate services function. The first target there is the annual review of organizational policies and report on these to the regulator. We actually have achieved that. All of the policies were reviewed, a policy gap analysis was signed off by the accounting authority. The next item dealt with the monitoring employee performance in order to achieve alignment with strategic objectives. This was achieved. Employee performance was monitored and reported upon. Page 9, still looking at corporate services, the achievement of all targets set in the annual performance plan was the target. This was actually achieved. Quarterly reports against plan performance were submitted to the DOT and the regulator members. The next item dealt with the assessment of employee performance to improve organizational efficiency and performance. This was achieved. Half year and final performance assessments were performed. Page 10. This is the HR function. The full implementation of our PRSA HR and training plan for members and staff, appropriate training being sourced internal and external for members and staff to attend annually, and these needed to have been reported to the regulator. This was achieved as well. Page 11, this is now getting into the economic regulation side of things. So the first target actually deals with tariff decision and the record of decisions being published, and this was, as I said, achieved on November 30th. We had published the record of decision and a new tariff for the port system. The next item was the final evaluation and impact assessment report submitted to the regulator, and this is on the tariff strategy, and this in fact was achieved. Page 12. So we have developed a training manual for interested students and other participants in economic regulation. So the target was one or more short course training sessions provided on the training manual that we had developed externally. And we had actually achieved this. Multiple short course training sessions were provided externally on economic regulation and reported to the accounting authority. We had to develop a range of economic regulatory outcomes for the medium and long term and a strategy for achieving these. So the target was to identify issues and develop the outcomes and a strategy for achieving the outcomes. This actually was achieved as well. On page 13, impact monitoring of the economic regulatory interventions on identifying compliance issues as published in the record of decision of the Ports Authority. So we had to do a report with the recommendations submitted to the regulatory committee, we call REGCOM for short, on the impact of economic regulatory interventions on compliance that had been published in the record of decision. And this was achieved. This report had been done and presented to the regulator. Modeling port demand over the medium term. I think port demand is an important thing, so that because it does affect pricing. The more goods there are, the cheaper the prices can be, because the distribution of the required revenue over the goods coming into our port system then also determine it. So it's an important determinant in assessing a price for a future year. So here we are to report on retro testing and forward predictability of a demand model and statistical margin of error. This was actually done and approved by the regulator and implemented in the tariff assessment. Page 14. This one dealt with the projects coming through from the Ports Authority as listed in the application. So we want to test the prudency of the capital projects. And so the annual targets was capital prudency assessment criteria applied in the tariff determination. And this actually had been done and achieved as well. The next one was the global tariff comparator study. This is a study that, as I mentioned earlier on, what was published was the seventh iteration of that. We're busy with the eighth iteration at the moment, comparing South African port prices with global ports, and to actually publish the produce and publish the comparator study. That was done as well. In fact, it is in the report that we've sent you, the latest version of that. Implementing the approved valuation methodology for the valuation of the regulatory asset base of the National Ports Authority. Here as well, the annual target was approved report on the implementation of the RAB, as we call it, the valuation of the regulatory asset base, and the starting regulatory asset base of the NPA. Here again, this was achieved, and it was then implemented within the tariff. Page 15. Now we're moving on to the what we call our industry development area. So this area deals with engaging stakeholders and monitoring provision of infrastructure and facilities and promotion of efficiencies in the port system. So in this, the first line itself, the first target was one or more engagements with port stakeholders to disseminate information and measure perceptions about the work of the regulator. And this actually was done. We actually had four quarterly stakeholder engagement reports and one stakeholder feedback report coming out of our roadshows, and these were all analyzed and written up into reports. Developing plan infrastructure adequacy assessment. The annual target there was report on the capital rollout program of the Ports Authority at existing efficiency levels, and a report on that was served to the CEO. Page 16. This dealt with the VIGO performance system, performance monitoring system had to be developed, and the VIGO performance report completed one quarter after the end of the financial year with available data. So this was actually achieved. The VIGO performance system was put in place, and every year some of the basket of indicators would be changed in consultation with the Ports Consultative Committees. Last year was the first time in which this actually system was developed as well as workshopped through the PCCs, as it were. And then PCC inputs on the weightings as well as the actual KPI basket was actually performed. The next one was develop equity of access strategy. This was done. The baseline equity access report was in the pack that I've given you on page 17. develop infrastructure operations and marine services efficiency targets as a report. This was done and it's called the TOC system. So within the Ports Authority, they have a contractual system by which particular targets must be measured. We normally look at whether TOPS is achieving the efficiencies, and this is what this report is about in this section. The next one is about CAPEX. What is the capital expenditure of the Ports Authority? Is it actually being implemented? Are they moving quite quickly on projects or not? We found that they're actually not. They're underspending quite a bit on CAPEX, but these are in the reports that have actually served. Page 18, we now sort of move on to the more legal section, stuff, the monitoring and compliance with the National Ports Act and other regulatory instruments to ensure access to and competition within the port system. In this target, there were four quarterly reports to the regulator on compliance issues and progress, if any, per quarter, and one annual compliance report to the executive authority. All of these have been achieved. Page 19, triple BE status. So this is to assess the Ports Authority's compliance with triple BE codes and report thereon to the regulator and the National Ports Authority with specific regard to transformation in the port system. Here again, that was achieved. The next item was to finalize instruments of enforcement and implement a compliance assessment framework for measuring equity of access across the port system. And here again, this was achieved. On page 20, legal instruments required to enforce efficiency standards and lock standards into the tariff methodology. So this was to finalize that, and what we've done is that under the record of decision, the standards and enforcements of existing legal instruments are provided in the record of decision. Right, that's page 20. Page 21. So this is about operating an efficient and effective tribunal to hear complaints and appeals under the National Ports Act. The target was that the chairperson, supported by the secretariat, to perform quarterly performance assessment regarding case management, oversight of pending and emerging litigation, adjudication, and decision making of the tribunal. Four quarterly reports were submitted to the regulator in terms of the numbers of matters heard, the records of decisions issued, new matters received, or matters settled. The very last page on this section, page 22, ensuring good governance and sustainability of the port regulator as an organization. Here it was, the target was on MOUs to be concluded by the port regulator with regulators and agencies on transversal issues. So it was to identify regulators and agencies that have overlapping jurisdiction and to sign MOUs with willing agencies. So this was actually done in that particular year, an MOU was signed with the BBBE Commission. And the last item there was in governance, ensuring good governance and compliance of the organization. This was achieved. We do have in our annual report a governance checklist that has been done in terms of King 4. Okay, so the page 23 then just gives a summary of overall 27 items were achieved. Chairperson, may I now hand over to the CFO to look at the financial management aspect.
Thank you, Mash. Morning, honored members. I'll move straight to slide 25, looking at the financial performance for the year. We had a surplus of 2.4 million rand caused by the fact that there were delays on the appointments of some of the key positions in the organization. In terms of our approved delegations, the regulator or board member, as it's normally called, formed part of the process upon the senior employees. However, the end of term of the office in November 2018 caused some high significant delays in the appointments. Other than that, we managed to stay within the budget that was allocated. Moving on to slide 26, that's our budget for the entity. You must remember that the postal operator is financed through the internal of the National Post Act. We financed by the transfers from the fiscal, because we're not able to raise any more additional funding, therefore we're limited to what can be transferred to us. However, every year we apply to the through the DOT for baseline revision, because as it's been communicated before, that the postal operator will be the nucleus of the state. Therefore, it's very important that we as the postal operator get capacitated to make sure when the state comes to place, we have enough resources to make sure the state is the ground running. So moving along, the postal operator, as I explained, in terms of the revenue, mostly is financed by the transfers from the fiscal. And then obviously, in terms of the regulation, we invest some of the funds once they're transferred to us, but before we actually spend them, and we're able to generate some interest, which then assists us to pay some of the operating expenses. Moving along to slide 28, the budget versus actual indicates that we as a postal operator have tried by almost stay within the budget. There's only 1 year where we overspend due to unforeseen circumstances, officials motivated and we'll use the reserves, which we have received support from the National Treasury to keep those reserves and spend those. Other than that, in the past couple of years, we have stayed within the budget and also we'll do the same going forward. Moving on, in terms of BE, Women and Youth Empowerment, our expenditure was above 75% in terms of rating of 2. We have total staff of 22 employees, of which 14 of them are women, so we do support women empowerment. And also, in terms of the development of suppliers, we don't have any programs yet directly related to that, but we try by all means that when we procure for the operating expenses, we target the black-owned women and youth-owned business to make sure that they can be their operations can be affected positively. And then also in terms of the, moving along to slide 30, and the employment equity, it can be seen that we do support to be in terms of blacks on the appointment, on the staff complement as well. Moving along to slide 31, that as I explained earlier, our expenditure, we try by all means on the discretionary to make sure that we spend as much as possible on the on the promotion of TPED. Now, on the bursaries and scholarships, because the funding is not that much that we receive, what normally do is we give financial assistance to our current employees, because the challenge we have is that when we have to fill some position in the entity, we struggle to get candidates that are qualified for the position and also able to afford them, to give them the right expectations. So what we normally do is we do a benchmark exercise every 5 years, where we compare our salaries to the industry, the public sector, and all that. But other than that, we try by all means that when we appoint interns, in fact, most of the studies that in the report that we've given the portfolio committee, most of those studies have been done by the employees who came as interns, but they grew within the entity. Therefore, we take very great pride in making sure that we develop our staff, because for all the positions that they came in the entity, we first try to look within what we have on the employees. And also, in that light, there are two executive managers who are funded by CETA, who have enrolled this year on the GIFT Executive Training Program. So that's one of the ways we should try to develop our intern employees. Moving along to slide 33, the audit outcomes for the past 4 financial years, we have received a clean audit from Auditor General. And then for 2018-19, we received an unqualified audit with a non-compliance filing, which led to irregular expenditure of 1.3 million rand and was disclosed in the financial statement. So this non-compliance is detailed in the management report. However, we, on a quarterly basis, to try and in terms of the audit outcomes action plan, we prepared a document which is reviewed by the internal auditor and also the policy audit committee, the Department of Transport, as well as the National Treasury, to show what actions are we taking to make sure that we correct the mistakes being done before and to make sure it doesn't happen in the future as well. And the conclusion from the Auditor General was that there was very little money received from the transaction that led to irregular expenditure, and So moving along to the Audit Outcomes Action Plan, we as a post regulator will ensure that going forward for all the findings that are raised by the AG, that we spend a bit more time, for example, on the procurement above half a million rand to make sure that it's compliant with statutory regulations and procurement expectations there, as well as FPC forms that they are completed by the suppliers. I must emphasize that in the past, the post regulator had used the CSD, which is Central Supplier Database, to confirm the suppliers and conflicts of interest, and this has been accepted by the OHG office. However, for 18-19 financial year, the AG went on to say, even though they do not accept the report, but over and above that, for quotations, they still want us to do that SPP for forms. So we agreed to that, and now we'll be doing that going forward. So moving along on the consequence management. So in terms of oversight for the secretariat, obviously the OHG committee plays a big role to make sure whatever is being raised is mitigated. However, when the regulatory members office term office expired in November 2018, obviously the only person there in the audit committee was the audit committee chairperson. But at that time there was a dispute between the audit committee chairperson and the regulator, and at that time it was not resolved up until in the AGM that was held last month, where the regulator recommended to the executive authority for a premature termination of the services of the chair of the audit committee. So as it stands now, the Coastal Police does not have a board and doesn't have an audit committee. However, we have second steps to make sure that we do appoint the non-executive members to the audit committee in the meantime while you're waiting for the Department of Transport to appoint the board members. Moving along, slide 36. On the challenges facing the regulators to execute the mandate, mainly to the budget, as I did explain on that we funded through the transfer from the fiscal. So we're hoping that the funding model that will be directed, that it can get a speedy process in terms of being approved in all the administrative channels. As it stands now, our current primary is 27 positions. Currently, there's only 22 that have been filled. We're hoping that we can fill more if the baseline revision is approved by the department. And also what we have done is we have, before the board members' term of office expired, they have revised our final frame to increase from 27 to 60. In terms of the National Post Act, the revision of the final frame was approved by the Minister of Transport with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. So we have submitted a memorandum together with the revised final frame to the Minister of Transport, and we're hoping they can approve that, because the rationale behind that, if we can be more capacitated as a regulator, we can deliver more in terms of our outputs, plus it should be a much capacitated entity in terms of becoming a nucleus for the state, which is supposed to come into existence within the next 2 to 3 years. And most importantly, the absence of the postal board is a challenge for us, because the board is involved in our operation. For the tribunal function, the board members, no matter for three, are the ones who can assist and adjudicate the matter. And also, secondly, when it comes to our tariff decision, the regulator members are the ones who are supposed to sign off on the ROD issued by the postal police. So for us, it is important that we get the problem as soon as possible, because that does affect our operations as an entity. And lastly, the CEO's employment contract expired at end of April 2019, and Honorable Minister Nzimande extended the contract up until end of October. So as we stand here today, the CEO's contract will end at the end of October. So at this point in time, we're not sure what the position is going to happen. So it's going to be a very critical instance where you don't have a board, plus you don't have a CEO. So come 1 November, we as a project is going to be in serious trouble. Maybe we won't even get paid salary. Moving along, slide 37. So in terms of proposals for regeneration, as I did explain earlier, if our funding model can't be approved, it will result in some relief on the fiscal, where we can be able, just like other regulators in the country, to be self-sustained and charge the regulatory fee to the regulated entity, and then can be able to generate some more funding, and then that will, you know, allow some room for the department to fund other operations that they have. So we are asking the portfolio committee to assist us to make sure that the funding model is approved as soon as possible, so that come this day, the revised current government is approved, and the approved funding model will allow us to increase from the change number that we have to hopefully, as soon as possible, to have 50 that we are targeting. And that is all. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, there we are. Honorable Hansinger, I can see you are ready.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Fakir, for your presentation and also for the CFO. Thank you for the presentation. The port regulator sits at a very uncomfortable situation in that both the accounting authority and the executive authority now in a very awkward situation is focused and sort of lands on one position, therefore, you know, carries the whole responsibility. With 12 vacancies on your board, it has a serious implication on one of your core benefits, which is now neutralized in relation to the tribunal and the functions of the tribunal. The tribunal, in essence, handles all and hears complaints and has to handle all appeals. So how is it currently done? Does it mean that you as the CEO, as the board, do you handle this, or how do you go about this? In terms of what we've heard around financial targets achieved, KPIs, performances, also, same question, who makes the determination of what KPIs have been achieved? Is it also you? Where are the check and balances in terms of oversight? Are you the oversight as well? And it's very peculiar that this all is structured in the way that it is during a time where very crucial decisions have to be taken around tariffs. Because the history of the ports regulator in relation to the determination of tariffs is a very specific one, in that for the past number of years, we as a global competitor are not competitive. And even now with the suggested price tariff structure, again, there is a premium to be paid and we are still not competitive. I do support the fact that one has to look at some form of smoothing or equalization, but why don't we simply correct the tariff prices that are out? Because we are a global competitor, we are certainly competing against other countries, and therefore our tariffs need to be in line with the rest of the world. There's been a strategy to correct this over a period of time, but the increments by which this is corrected is just too much of a smooth nature, and therefore we are pricing ourselves out and we are making it more difficult for the people that try to make a business and a living out of imports and exports. Then, more in relation to your sole responsibility and uncomfortable situation as the accounting authority as well as the executive authority, I want to address you with regards to the aspects which the AG has pointed out. If you could just respond to the core findings in the AG report in relation to goods and services procured without the required price quotations. How can this happen? Why was this done? Also, by not inviting competitive bids, quotes accepted without required declarations, regulations required in terms of treasury regulation, and then more specifically, and I don't mean this personally in any way, but then leadership did not exercise adequate oversight over, in particular, non-compliance with laws and regulations. Again, I have huge respect for all the responsibilities. I don't mean this in any way, in a personal way. I know that you've landed in the situation and you're trying your utmost best, and I have respect for that. But if you could just explain that, Thank you, Chair.
Honourable May.
Yeah. Chair, I'm from the Eastern Cape, and we have got two harbours, the Pier Harbour and the Kuga Harbour. And the economic value of Pier Harbour is so important, especially when you think in terms of job creation. As far as development is concerned, what is the possibility that some can play a role in the developing in the Pier Harbour? I've read an article a few years ago, and they said they're looking at the Pier Harbour like the waterfront in Cape Town, but nothing happened. What do you think is the possibility that can be developed in the near future? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think the only issue that perhaps I have is the, if you go to page 25, on your financial management and budget expenditure, that first page, you know, when you are reporting in terms of financial or financial statement, one would be forgiven to think that your revenue was only 22,489. Because on this page, it's not explicit. Only when you go to the second page where you get to understand we're talking about millions here. But nonetheless, you had budgeted about 16,658,000 for employee compensation. You have spent only 82% of that to date. Why is that the case? Or is it, or maybe a plausible explanation could be, maybe this is year to date, perhaps, or do you have any vacancies which are funded, which have not been filled? If yes, why? I think, you know, for the past four financial years, you've sustained it in OD. Only for this financial year, there's a 1.3 million rand irregular expenditure. You know, one would ask, were you the CFO in the past four financial years? If yes, and then if not, and now that you are the CFO, the organization is regressing. And also, I mean, you know, even in all government institutions, the most basic procurement principle, for instance, each and every expenditure item which is above 500,000 rand, you need to invite competitive bids for you to procure such goods. In this case, it seems like this was not followed. And also, you are saying that there is an action plan on the three non-compliance findings from the AG. Perhaps if you can give me, in terms of the tracking mechanism, how far are you with that? Because yes, there is a plan. You can say there is a plan, but today, you know, any good plan would have a tracking mechanism to say by this time we would have done this, would have done that, would have done that. And then also, you spoke about non-compliance, the consequence management. Someone didn't do something here, which has seen the organization regressing from a four consecutive clean audit to an unqualified audit. What's going to happen to those people now? Because, you know, you, like in the past financial year, in the past four financial years, you were the beacon of clean governance and financial reporting and financial management. But currently, you know, one would say, hey, you are regressing. But now, consequence management, what's going to happen? Because I see here you are saying that you are taking people for training and all of those things. I mean, for the past four financial years, all those people were trained adequately. All of a sudden, there is an irregular expenditure of 1.3 million rand. You must go now take people for training. I mean, in the past four financial years,
Those people were working adequately, they were doing everything according to the book. Only last year, it tells you that those people don't need training. Disciplinary action needs to be taken against them. Because, I mean, for an organization, for 4 consecutive financial years, we're running a clean organization in terms of financial reporting. Only now. No training is needed there. You need to assert your authority. You need to follow HR processes, bring people to book, consequence management, so that we can set an example. I mean, you know, it's green, and then our. It doesn't make any sense. Actually, I think I was waiting 3 minutes. Thank you.
Honorable Mani. Any taker? Let's hear the voice from the woman.
Thank you, Chair. I think the previous speaker has covered me very well in my question in terms of consequence management. But I just want to add, because in page 33, you confirm that the entity did receive value for money on the goods and services received. Therefore, there's no requirement to implement recovery of funds from the officials concerned. But we need to know what steps have you taken to discipline those people and what was the outcome. And then on page 50, I see that there's a drop in employment equity stats. Maybe you need to explain why. And lastly, how much have you spent on consultants, if you do have consultants? And the tariff issue was addressed by Member Hansenka. Thank you.
Okay. Done, this side. Thank you. Let's hear from you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the Honorable Hansinger's question. And okay, there is correctly an uncomfortable situation in terms of accounting authority and chief executive officer, in that I have been then delegated, and of course I think it is an automatic delegation under PFMA section 49(2)(b) that if there is no board or accounting authority, as it were, the CEO has to step into those shoes. But you are correct that unfortunately it is not merely an accounting authority. The regulator board as such is not only a governing body. It has regulatory functions and regulatory role in that respect. And so it's the PFMA, I don't think, is able to delegate that the CEO can play the role of the regulator. It can play the role of the governing side of it as an accounting authority. And that is what I've been able to do at the moment. So in terms of the administrative issues like performance of the organization, in terms of what you've noted as how the achievement and who signs off on the performance of people within the organization, I can do that as an accounting authority. But unfortunately, tribunal functions cannot be done because that is not an accounting authority function, it's a regulator function. And the Act sets this organization's governing body as a regulator. So we have had to suspend the tribunal. We had to suspend it on the last day that the regulator was there. Whatever matters were there, I had to inform people that, or participants in matters, that the tribunal has to be suspended until the executive authority, which is the Minister of Transport, then appoints a new regulator. So things like the KPIs, like you spoke of, I have actually been able to, as the governing side of things, be able to take the work that the organization has done and say that, okay, this is approved or not approved, etc. In terms of the checks and balances on oversight, we have still an independent internal audit. So we have an independent internal audit company that comes and audits. We've had the AG that's audited the performance as well as the finances, etc. So it's not just me saying these things, but there has been that situation. The point that we made earlier on in terms of consequence management is that there was someone who was an independent audit committee chairperson that because he wanted or he had a dispute in terms of payments, which in fact before the actual board finished, they had actually taken a decision that whatever we had paid him was fair and that, you know, he did not have a claim to any more funding or any more remuneration. And he continued then not to play his guiding role within the organization as an independent audit committee chair. And so one of the consequences of this audit is that actually he, where this person should have played the role, they didn't. He carried on all the way until this thing had to be published, and then he didn't sign off on the documents, etc. And so we then, in terms of the PFMA, sought guidance as well as concurrence with the executive authority in the annual general meeting to terminate his service as a consequence of this. And that has been done now. So we are in the process of advertising for a full set of independent audit committee chair people, not chair but members, chair and members, and we're in fact I signed off on the advert during this week and it would be advertised. So we are going to appoint an independent audit committee even though we do not have the regulator at this stage appointed by the minister yet. So that if this becomes a prolonged period without regulator members, then in fact we would have an independent oversight and to provide the checks and balances that you're saying is necessary and that we feel is necessary as well. So I'm not sure if I've fully answered your question. Okay, on the tariff, yes, so it is the regulator members that is supposed to approve the tariff. We have a tariff decision coming up by the end of November. In terms of the law, we are hoping we do get a board appointed or a regulator appointed by then. Otherwise, this is another, is going to become an issue. You are right, in some areas we are not so competitive. There are parts of the tariff, for example, in containers, container cargo dues and automotive cargo dues on the import side that are still higher than global averages. Although we're still far better than other countries. On the shipping side, our costs are, or our prices are below world averages. On things like coal and iron ore, we are below world averages. It doesn't mean that the average is the correct price, but we have to be, what the tariff strategy is over a period is to get to the cost reflective price. It may still mean that cost reflective prices in some areas are still higher than others because some countries have a higher cost structure than other countries. Some countries have what we would call subsidies, inherent subsidies and cross subsidies. Like I always say to people that there are ports in the world that were built on slave labor so they can be cheap. It can't be that our country is cheap because we must now use those same things. A country's cost, as long as it is at least cost reflective, and thereafter we can move away from cost reflectiveness and give discounts where necessary or pick up prices where necessary. But what we are trying to do is achieve through the tariff strategy a cost reflective tariff system. The port pricing previously was characterized on ad valorem prices. So if the cargo you're moving is more expensive, then the port charge for that was higher. So we've had a case before, one of our tribunal cases, one was on steel versus stainless steel rolled coils, for example. So on a port, you know, near the key wall, you're loading on the one hand cold rolled or hot rolled mild steel versus rolled stainless steel. Why should the cargo due on both of them, they're the same size, weigh more or less the same thing, why should the one be higher than the other? So ad valorem pricing means that the use of the infrastructure is not relevant. And so we want to make cost-reflective prices where the use of the infrastructure itself is the thing that you're pricing. Because the entity that we are regulating is the Ports Authority, and it is an infrastructure agency of government. So we've moved away from ad valorem pricing, and we are moving towards cost-reflective pricing. And so I suppose your question is, why not one big bang? I think there would be a lot of a shock to the economy that has had to happen in different industries. So it is a gradual thing, and of course it does depend on the unraveling of information, etc., which is very difficult for a small group of 20 odd people to do in the face of a massive giant. That's always a difficulty as well. I think I've answered the question, but I know there's still more that we would engage on as we go into the actual tariffs, the tariff system. We are actually publishing a new methodology soon, and we've asked for comment, public comment, on what the tariff methodology should be. There is no reason in law why an individual parliamentarian or a group of people cannot make a submission to the regulator. I think it is important. I think it doesn't mean that you take away the independence of the regulator, because the regulator itself has asked for submissions on these issues, on pricing. The closing date for the submissions on pricing for the next tariff methodology is the 4th of November, so there is still time if anyone would like to make a submission, a written submission to the regulator on pricing. I think the next question on PN Kuka, the possibility of the waterfront. Look, the PE, as far as the regulator is concerned, we are there to regulate pricing as well as access in terms of the commercial ports policy, the National Ports Act. There isn't, I don't think the emphasis should be on creating that, using ports money and port charges on other users to create something like a waterfront which deals with entertainment and not necessarily logistics within the country. So our view is that the ports of our country are the nodes to the logistics chain in the country. And once, over a period of time, those nodes become constricted by other activities not related to logistics, then we have to then build new ports, and our prices go higher and higher as we have to build more and more ports. So where it's possible to use the existing node to enhance the value of the logistics chain, it makes far more sense than shifting the focus of something like a port to something like entertainment. I think this has been realized in the past, and things like the waterfront here in Cape Town were sold off, etc., and didn't form part of the responsibility of a logistics company like the Ports Authority or Transnet as a whole. My impassioned plea would be to let us not change these important nodes in the logistics chain of the country and refocus them to do something else, because then in future, when your children's children are your age now, the amount of goods, the kind of facilities that we will need into the future will then, of course, we'll need far more, it will become therefore more expensive. So let's optimize the use of the things that we have now in terms of port infrastructure, port space, etc. Can I hand over to the CFO if we're not done? Okay.
Thanks, Mahesh. Okay, in response to the HA findings, the first one regarding the declaration of interest. What has happened is since 2017, when the Treasury issued the instruction note 4A regarding the CFD, you must remember that the CFD puts together all the requirements in terms of taxation, that is, the declaration, the tax affairs, the fee, etc. So that's all now done in one sensor. Now, what we have done since then is every time when we procure, we print out the safety report for part of the audit trail. And that we've done since that says 2017, and the AG has accepted that. Now, this financial year 18-19 audit, the AG came and said, no, we accept only when you're doing tenders, but on small posts, yes, I do see the CSD, but I still want to go back now and do the SBT form. So in a sense, it's more like the AG, if I can use the word, change to say, yes, we accepted you to do the CSD for small codes, but now we want you to do the CSD plus to the SBT form. So for us, because they did accept it in the past, we then said, fine, if there's a requirement that you want, we'll continue to do that. However, we're doing what's been accepted in the past, and that has led obviously to the clean audit. Secondly, with regards to the obtaining three codes, there were very isolated instances where we had not obtained three codes, and we had explained on the memorandum that forms part of the chain. I mean, for example, there was a finding on one employee who was studying at UKZN for a qualification that's only available at UKZN within the KZN province, obviously because she can attend every day after work from 6 to 9. Now, the issue comes and said, look, yes, you can see that it's only available at UKZN, but you still should have wanted to get other codes, even though they should not respond to your needs. So it becomes really difficult when you are expected to just go and get codes, but you know those codes don't satisfy your needs, just for the sake of tick off that you have three codes. So we had done our best to explain that in terms of the management response that, look, all these findings we have is only those very isolated instances where there was really no other supplier that could provide the service, and we had expanded in detail on the memorandum. However, as if that's what you require, we'll go out and attach other codes, but then it's going to come an issue, because in the past 2 years, we had an instance where we did get about four codes, but we took the most expensive because the other ones could not accept for other reasons. And we had a finding from the AG, they were saying, no, why must we go and just get the number of codes, yet you know those suppliers don't respond to your needs. So we are more like on a back and forth scenario where 1 year they accept something, following year they don't accept it. On the third one regarding the procurement of goods are above half a million rand without going on a standard process. The procurement was for a vehicle, and based on our assessment we identified that because of our funding position, if we go out on a standard process, number one, we obviously, if a supplier go and buys whatever that vehicle, one, they will get an administrative cost, two, they're going to add the markup. Therefore, we wanted to take advantage of being able to negotiate at discount with the dealership. We did go and get quotes from different dealerships and managed to get the discount from those dealerships. And also taking into account the fact that it was December last year before the new price increase taking effect in January. We did explain all that to the auditors, but for them they said, yes, we understand what you're saying, but whenever it's above half a million, we must go on a tender process. So our argument was we were trying to save money for the organization because based on our calculations, the organization saved about 2,000 to 3,000 rand on the, because it was only one expenditure that we had made. However, if there's the condition, fine, even if we spend more money on goods and services, we will comply with the tender process. It's only one instance that has happened now. In the past, when it comes to some of the procurement, even though they're below half a million rand, we had gone on the tender process. For example, this goes in line with the question there on the consultants. One of the concerns for the year that we had was on the HR. That, like I explained earlier on, that we do what we call a salary benchmarking exercise every 5 years. So we're doing an 18-19, therefore that's the only consultant we had for the financial year, of where we spent less than 200,000 rand. Then also what we normally do is for our research activities, we have to get some data from other entities for our study, etc. So when it comes to consultants, only use the HR and those research data consultants. Now, in terms of under expenditure on compensation for employees, our approved delegation of authority requires that the board members must be part of the process for the appointment of senior or executive employees. Now, the term of office expiring in November then puts a stop into the process of appointing the vacant positions of senior managers. Only when Mahesh received the delegation in April from the then Minister Arun Zimande, that we could then proceed, that Mahesh can sign off as the accounting authority to appoint those senior positions. As it stands now, we don't have any vacant funded positions. All positions in the Gonkrem that are funded have been filled. But we do have a challenge, and I agree that in terms of checks and balances, it becomes an issue where administratively Mahesh must oversee everything else, at the same time must take up that head and put the head of a board who must exercise oversight. Now, with regards to the my employment, I've been working at the Post Office since February 2011. So I've been there when, in fact, before those years, they were getting much worse for the findings. Over the years, we did improve up until such a clean audit. It's only in the financial year 18-19 that we regressed in terms of irregular expenditure. However, we on the tracking mechanism for the audit accounts action plan, like I explained, that we do submit that on a quarterly basis to the Department of Transport and National Treasury. We still do have internal audit function that come into the work every quarter. Then what they do is they take the outcome action plan and review the action items. What are we doing to correct those? And then they prepare a report, which then gets submitted to Mahesh as a accounting authority at this point in time. And one of the reasons why we're trying to increase the oversight function is the one that we want to go ahead and appoint a fully non-independent, non-executive independent audit committee. Because if we, it's been a long time without the board, so it's rather we have oversight committee that is, so that all these items can be corrected as soon as possible up until the time that the department finalizes the process to appoint the board members. So I think I did explain the one on the consultants. And then on the consequences, we had extensive meetings with the staff that is involved in the procurement, explaining the AG's findings and their recommendations, and we have implemented those from the time that this one has came through. All the expectations that were raised by the AG, we are doing that, so that going forward, you don't have these sub-findings taking place. I hope I did cover everything.
If I could just add as well that the independent audit company that is doing our internal audit also had no findings. So it means that the sense I got was that the AG's people were really digging very deep this time. And so the things that were not findings before now became findings. And so even the independent internal audit gave us a clean audit in that sense. So we were then caught by surprise when we did get an unqualified opinion this time. Yes, thank you, Chair.
the Office of the Auditor General is here. You are raising an issue of consistency. I think this issue was raised also yesterday by one of the entities. But we must accept that your position is not actually doing good for the entity. No regulator, no independent audit committee chair, no board. It means we may have issues next year. And that is not entirely a blame that can be put in your doorstep. We will be taking that with the department to assist you on these issues, so that you have all the elements they are fully structured. We've picked up your request of the funding model that is also to be approved. We will take that up and help you to stay on the safe side of the clean audit. Transformation wise, are you transforming the industry? Let's hear that from you. How far are you with the transformation of the industry?
Right. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the regulations, we are supposed to be playing a monitoring role on equity of access. Our tribunal function also hears issues of equity of access. So in terms of the legislation, those are our roles in terms of transformation. But what we did, like I said, is we went a little bit beyond that. We said, if we look at BBBE implementation in the industry as a whole, we did a study on that to look at all different aspects, whether we are looking at terminal operators, whether we're looking at stevedoring, diving licenses, all of those, they are in our report. So we said we will establish, because nobody seems to be measuring this, we will establish a tool by which we say, here's the baseline of what the port sector has in terms of equity of access. And we would then use that to make recommendations to the Department of Transport, as well as departments dealing with procurement, like the DTI, to then say that these are what we are finding. And what we are finding, and it is in the documents that I've given you, is that people are able to make, companies in the port sector are able to score highly on BEE in terms of the scorecards because of a number of other factors like training, like procurement, etc. But within the port sector itself, you don't see the change. So there has been a change from the days when there were no black ownership of anything or woman ownership in the port sector. So there is a significant change. But what we are doing is then monitoring that. We then have to input into the new sector codes that the Department of Transport is developing, which would then have to be approved, I think, by DTI. Then that allows the port sector to have different targets on BEE, and in particular what we analyzed is ownership as a measure of transformation. I'm asking this committee as well whether in fact legislation can introduce what transformation means, because we've taken ownership as meaning transformation. Now in our BBBE procurement rules in the country, those scores, the scoring by which, I mean, ownership is one thing, but if we want transformation, then the definitions of what transformation should be, the timelines and targets for transformation should be in legislation. I have not seen that in any legislation, unless I'm wrong. Please, if you feel that the definition of transformation and the timelines for transformation exist in legislation, then we would, you know, I would say sorry, I'm wrong, and that then I can be redirected by that legislation. But at the moment, what we are saying is that transformation itself doesn't seem to be defined anywhere, and the steps by which we will achieve transformation in this country. But we are taking the steps to actually define transformation in our studies as being ownership by black people, by women, etc. And that is the nature of the studies we have done. And we are using those studies to say to the minister, can we then redefine the sector codes in the port sector to look more strongly at transformation and ownership. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, Chairman.
You are trying very hard to dodge this question. using legislation and so forth. It's now 25 years, eh? Black people must go and own them. You must just understand that thing. It's as simple as that. Women and young people. So that we close this thing with time and build a nation. So it should not be in 25 years. An issue of us going back and doing legislation for officials to understand that an Africans on set Vatonsnum are expelling their axis. That axis must come to an end. We must transform and affirm those who are not affirmed. You can see even when it comes to members, when it deals with this particular entity, there's not the clarity because it's a new kind of a thing when it comes to us. So you must just know that for as long as this committee is here and I'm chairing it, every time we meet, this question you'll have to answer and answer it positively. Where we need to assist you, we will assist you. But in 25 years, it cannot be accepted that we are still doing a study as to how we transform this country. The people are getting very impatient with all of us, actually. So, do your best. We'll make follow-ups. We'll also raise this issue with the department later. Otherwise, you are released till we see you. Go and wait. Thank you. Liberated. Thank you. We'll see you next time. Honorable members, we are live. Now when you have all sorts of dishes in front of you there, bananas and everything, it does not look good publicly, right? That is why I said lightly that you are not allowed to eat here. This is a different arena. You are live. People are seeing you with big pots of bread there in front of you.